Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Welcome in to Outkick the Show. I am your fearless leader, Clay Travis. I hope all of you are having fantastic Wednesday. I think it's Wednesday. All the days run together. I believe it is, in fact, Wednesday. Wherever you are across this great country or this great land, we got a lot to dive into. I certainly appreciate all of you hanging out with us. Some good news. Those people say there's not enough positivity in the world. Clay, why aren't you happier every day on your show? Why don't you only tell us good stories? Here's a good story. More people are watching. I think it's a good story. More people are watching the NCAA men's and women's tournament than has ever been watched before in the history of the NCAA men's and women's tournament. I've got a thesis for you that I haven't heard very many people others share. A rising tide is lifting all boats. The men's tournament doing fabulously well, and the women's tournament doing fabulously well is actually not hurting either of them. It's actually elevating both. Remember, coming into the NCAA tournament, a lot of the woke sports writers out there were saying, nobody likes men's tournament, it's boring. The coaches aren't interesting. The players aren't very well known. Nobody cares. The women's tournament, rah, rah, rah. And then the ratings came out and the men's tournament is crushing the women's tournament, as always happens. But actually what's occurring is that both are setting all-time record highs. And I would suggest to you that what it reflects is that men's basketball tournament play, really exciting. And women's basketball tournament play, really exciting. And that, if you like one of them, the cross-promotional value of the other makes you aware in a way that maybe hasn't happened in the past that both are going on simultaneously. Adam is here in studio. I believe the number is, if you correct me on this, 12.3 million people watched the LSU versus Iowa women's basketball game. I think that's the number. Over 15 million people watched NC State Duke. NC State Duke, let's start here, a men's Elite Eight game that got, I don't think, that much promotion, outrated every single NBA Finals game last year. Think about that for a moment. Every single NBA Finals game was beaten by NC State Duke. LSU and Iowa women, maybe even more remarkably, beat four of the five Finals games last year, and only one of those games outrated it. Here's a crazier stat for you. More people watched NC State Duke than have watched any NBA Finals game of the last 4 years. Let me repeat that because it's a crazy stat and you might not hear it anywhere else. A college men's game, NC State and Duke, outrated every single NBA Finals game of the last 4 years. And it's not a title game, it's just an Elite Eight game. If I gave you all that data, which I just did, and if you were an honest purveyor of truth and just interested in asking intriguing questions, based on that data, people love college basketball. NIL's not harming things. In fact, college basketball, men's and women's, has never been stronger than it is this year. Now, I have a bunch of theories about why that is. I'll give you one of them. I think in an era where everything is getting siloed, I think there is a desperate desire for people to come together and share things that they can talk about. In other words, you may or may not have gone and watched Barbie. You may or may not have gone and seen Dune 2. Those are big movies. You probably watch different television shows, but you can still come together and talk about a big sporting event and not have to really say anything about yourself other than you like watching competition. I also think, and nobody else is really talking much about this, I think sports gambling has been hugely beneficial overall to sports ratings because it gives people more of a stake in an entire game. And I know all gamblers innately understand this, because how many of you out there right now, I bet if you're watching or listening to this, you have watched a game that was long decided in the score to see whether or not a team covers or whether or not a total hits. I think if you are a gambler, you are more likely to stay fully committed to a game, even if it's not close and even if the outcome is already decided. There are a lot of games in my life that I've been sitting there on the couch, sweating out the close of a bet when the game's been decided for an hour and a half, right? And I bet a lot of you are like me with that. I think that also factors in. But why isn't anybody talking about college men's basketball and women's basketball setting all-time highs for viewership? Literally never have more people watched. And the NBA is not even close to its all-time viewership high when Michael Jordan was winning in 1998 his final championship with the Chicago Bulls. I remember the NCAA tournament in 1998 being very popular. I'm old enough to have filled out brackets in 1998. I'm old enough to have filled out brackets before everybody did it online. The NCAA tournament has always been popular. Caitlin Clark, I'll talk about her a bit in a moment, but I think certainly she is kind of the Ronda Rousey right now of women's college basketball. People care about her. They don't care as much about the sport, but we'll talk about that in a moment. You could maybe even say she's the Jordan of women's college basketball right now, not in terms of being the greatest ever, although you could make an argument, but I'll talk about that maybe in a sec. But the NBA is like 75% off of its all-time highs. That is, three of every four people that were willing to watch the NBA when Michael Jordan played are not watching the NBA finals today. Yet college basketball is still setting all-time highs with men's and women's. Why is that? Why will no one talk about the fact that the NBA, courtesy of LeBron James, Adam Silver, Greg Popovich, Steve Kerr, and the entire social media era, why will no one talk about the fact that the NBA destroyed the brand that David Stern, Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson built into a colossus? Because it requires acknowledging that going woke is destructive to brands. You've seen it happen with Bud Light, but I would argue that the NBA was the first Bud Light. In fact, I've written a huge long article on it. I would encourage you to go read it, but I would ask you, why is nobody else talking about this? They're fine pitting the identity of, oh, women's basketball is more popular than men's basketball now. Oh, the stars of women's basketball are way more. Why is nobody saying, actually, all of college basketball is way more popular than the NBA? Why is that the case? Wouldn't that be a logical question that you would ask? I'll tell you why. Because men's versus women's NCAA tournament is identity politics. That's what sports media members love. Oh, let's talk about identity politics. Women are better than men. Hey, in all facets of life. And the best people of all are men with penises who pretend they're women. That's how this works. But if you had to argue, oh, college basketball is actually way more popular than the NBA, then you have to acknowledge that a predominantly black male league has failed because it's embraced the same politics that the sports media wants every athlete to embrace. That's more challenging. Just ask you that. Tweet it to people. Tweet it to all the sports media people out there. Hey, how come you're so focused on the women's NCAA ratings or the men's NCAA ratings? How come you never compare it to the NBA? Because the data shows people love basketball. The NBA has managed to destroy itself. It's a really interesting story that should be incredibly captivating for anybody who cares about business, markets, anything. That's what they should be covering. By the way, Crockett Coffee. Your boy now has a coffee company. I had a pants company. Didn't go so well. I had a media company. It went well. I sold it to Fox. Now I've got a coffee company. And if you'll give me a pause here, I'm going to take a delectable sip of Crockett Coffee, which you can purchase every single day on CrockettCoffee.com. If you love America, Crockett Coffee should be the coffee that you consume. Ah, delectable. Absolutely fantastic. I want to tell you about Caitlin Clark, CrockettCoffee.com. I want to tell you about Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark is doing for women's college basketball what Ronda Rousey did for the UFC, and to a certain extent what Jordan did for the NBA. She is bringing in people who would otherwise not be interested at all in the sport and watching because of her. If Iowa beats, I think they play UConn. If Iowa beats UConn in the Final Four, and if South Carolina wins and advances the championship game, a lot of people will watch. If UConn beats Iowa, a pinprick of the number of people will watch. Caitlin Clark has already announced she's going to the WNBA. She is not going to be back next year for college basketball. So the question I would ask you is this. What is the lasting legacy of Caitlin Clark in women's college basketball? And is this really a situation where the sport is going to continue to skyrocket? Or is she a comet shooting across women's college sports sky? And once she leaves, the interest will return to more traditional levels. I tend to think the latter. The other question is, will she provide the same caliber of benefit to the WNBA? That's a really fascinating question. My general idea is no, because there is no embedded WNBA fandom. That is, most of you can't even name a WNBA team. And think about this. If I am correct, it would mean that women's college sports is actually a very fascinating market that isn't really replicated anywhere else, because there's lots of Iowa fans and Caitlin Clark is able to attach her brand to Iowa. There's lots of UConn women's basketball fans, Tennessee Lady Vols who need a new coach. Dawn Staley has built the South Carolina women into a brand. And so when you bring that brand together with the talent in women's college basketball, it makes everything bigger. Are there going to be people who care about the WNBA and the WNBA franchises? I don't think so. So whereas we're talking now, hey, Caleb Williams is going to go to the Bears. A lot of people care about the Chicago Bears. Caleb Williams is not going to be hurt leaving USC to go to the NBA, to go to the NFL. Dalton Kinect is going to leave the University of Tennessee. University of Tennessee has a massive fan base. He's going to go to an NBA team. And while I might think that the NBA has lost 75% of its audience, and it has, NBA teams still have fans. WNBA teams don't. Caitlin Clark is bigger than the WNBA. She's bigger than women's college basketball, but women's college basketball is way more popular than the WNBA. So what will the Caitlin Clark superstar effect mean for the WNBA? I think that's a fascinating question. I want to give credit to Emmanuel Acho. He and I have a lot of different opinions on sports, as anyone who is a sports fan should. But I thought that Acho had a really good take on Angel Reese. You know what he did? He gave his opinion on Angel Reese, and he specifically said, I'm leaving gender and her race out of the equation, and he just analyzed her as an individual. And I watched it, and I said, you know what's so great about this? This is how all of the 80s, the 90s, and the 2000s were before social media took over the discussions that we have in the world of sports. What do I mean by that? I mean that all that mattered was you. We judged your performance in sports. We didn't ask, what's your race? We didn't ask, what's your religion? We didn't ask, what's your gender? We just looked at you on the field or on the court and said, man, is this guy or this gal as good as they can be? do we believe that they're performing at the absolute apex level? And this is the way that I believe sports should be viewed, because it brings everybody together. Sports is the antithesis of identity politics. Should be. Because the only thing that matters is the best man or woman, period. And sports has heroes or villains, but the heroes and the villains are typically not reflected based on the race and the gender of the athlete. For instance, look at men's college basketball right now. I would submit to you that on one side of the bracket, NC State versus Purdue, NC State is the heroic Cinderella and Purdue is the villain. Because I think most people see Zach Edey, who is the star of Purdue, and he happens to be half white and half Asian, as the villain of the NCAA tournament now. And I think most people see NC State, DJ Burns, as the hero. DJ Burns happens to be a black guy, chubby, that a lot of people would prefer play tackle, but he plays in the NFL. But he plays with an exuberance and a joyfulness that many of us find captivating. Whereas Zach Edey, I don't know that I've ever seen him smile. And back in the day, you had Jordan against Patrick Ewing. Patrick Ewing, not anywhere near as likable, glowering, big, physically dominant center that not a lot of people connected to. Jordan, exuberant, seemed more norm down to life size, people connected with, right? That's how sports. It doesn't matter about your race or your gender. It's excellence or your exuberance that you put forward onto the court that oftentimes dictates who we like. It's not about identity politics. That's the best thing about sports. I just gave you an example. DJ Burns against Zach Edey, right? Half white, half Asian, black guy. Black guy's way more popular because he happens to be chubby. I think if DJ Burns were a chubby white guy and had the exact same persona, I think he would be exactly as popular. Because I don't think most sports fans decide who they root for based on anything other than what they get from somebody on the court or their overall personality at large. I like villains. Some would say that I am a villain. Some would say that I'm an antagonist, that there are protagonists you like might like more. Every great story has a protagonist and an antagonist. That is the conflict. In the wake of her victory last year, when Angel Reese beat Caitlin Clark in Iowa and LSU won the championship, Angel Reese ran around doing the "you can't see me," pointing to her ring finger right in Caitlin Clark's face. That made her a villain. It made her a gloating, in the eyes of many, a gloating showboat. And many people debated whether it was acceptable or appropriate. Angel Reese lived in that villainy. She probably certainly made hundreds of thousands of dollars off of all of the attention. She may well have made millions of dollars based on all that attention. But then as soon as she lost, and make note, by the way, Caitlin Clark didn't do the "you can't see me." She didn't point to her ring finger. She didn't wave goodbye. She didn't taunt Angel Reese at all. What did Angel Reese want to become as soon as she got to the post-game press conference? She wanted to be a victim. And this is where I give credit to Acho on FS1 for calling this out. He said, villains don't get to be victims. When Thanos snapped his fingers and eliminated half of all life, spoiler alert, in the Avengers franchise, Thanos then didn't have a press conference and say, "You know what happened? People really didn't like me. They sent me death threats. They made really mean memes that sexualized me." If you're the villain, people are going to be mean to you. And let me just say this. Nobody has a great deal of sympathy for the villain. You got to own it. I don't remember Reggie Miller back in the day sitting down at a press conference and saying that people were too mean to him. Okay? You can't be the villain and the victim. Those two roles don't go together. And I love villains. I loved Reggie Miller back in the day. I think one of the problems with sports today is because of social media, so few people are willing to be the villain because people say mean things to them online. And I got to say, online is toxic. I don't want my kids on social media. We didn't allow and don't allow our kids to get a phone for the first time until they're 14. And then in our house, we're trying to set the standard. The kids are smarter than we are. That you don't get to have a social media account until you're 16 years old. I don't know if we're going to be able to hold steadfast to that, but I think that social media is toxic for many people. And I don't think that you can claim, oh, people are super mean to me online, because there's also a lot of positivity out there. And it's also all fake. Like, I don't care. Like, the reason why I built OutKick into the brand it is, and the reason why Crockett Coffee did over $20,000 in sales is in the first day, is because people like or dislike me. And sometimes they might say mean things to me. I get it. It doesn't really, I don't think, impact me. You can say, like, I'm a little bit strange in that respect. I tend to remember the nice things and immediately forget the mean things. But you can't be a villain. You cannot be a villain for purposes of social media and then and your public persona in general, and then lose and claim, oh, I'm the victim. I think Angel Reese will come to understand that. But I thought it was a great post, a great take by Acho. Another story out there. Stephon Diggs to the Houston Texans. Buffalo Bills are sellers, and right now we have got buyers in a big way in Houston. What's going on here? I think this is a function of salary cap. When you are a stud quarterback and you eventually get a $50 million contract, as all stud quarterbacks do, it detracts from your ability to continue to build around the star quarterback with high-priced receivers. We already saw the Chiefs go through this. Chiefs traded, to me, there's a direct analogy here. Chiefs traded Tyreek Hill to the Miami Dolphins. Chiefs have continued to dominate. They've won, what is it, two straight Super Bowls? I think I'm right about that. Since they traded Tyreek Hill. Yeah, they beat the Eagles, and then they just won again against the 49ers. A lot of people out there said Tyreek Hill leaving the Chiefs is going to destroy the window for the Chiefs. Instead, Tyreek Hill has gone to Miami, and he's been fantastic. But the Chiefs have won two straight Super Bowls. They had to make that move because they couldn't afford to give him $20 million plus. I think that's what the Bills are trying to do now with Stephon Diggs. So you have the Bills, because of the cost of their stars, now having to rebuild with younger talent around Josh Allen and try to prolong the window that way. And you have the Houston Texans, which is exactly what the Chiefs did. And then you have the Houston Texans for a second round pick saying, wait a minute, now is the time for us to make a run because we've got CJ Stroud under way lower contract than he's going to get in 4 years. And we want to take advantage and build as much talent around him right now as we possibly can. So this can be a situation where you can completely understand the Bills dynamic here. And I would suspect that the Bills are going to trade up and try to take a young receiver that they hope can build into a Stephon Diggs-like player. And that they're going to try to do with Josh Allen what you have already seen the Chiefs be capable of doing and what you saw Brady do for a long time before. Remember, name for me other than Randy Moss the top receiver that ever played for Tom Brady, who was a definite Hall of Famer. He's had some great tight ends, but Edelman, Wes Welker, other than Randy Moss, Adam, you can correct me if I'm wrong over there. Other than Randy Moss, I don't think that Tom Brady ever had a bona fide Hall of Fame receiver with him in his entire tenure in New England. Now, there's Edelman arguments. There's Welker arguments. But go look, Givens. Go look at the guys that were his top receiver, Troy Brown back in the day. I'm just running through some names. Certainly had incredible talent at tight end. Gronkowski is going to be a Hall of Famer. But in terms of receivers, that's the story. And look at what happened with Mahomes last year. He had a bunch of second-rate dudes who oftentimes couldn't catch the ball at all. What happened? Patrick Mahomes was so good, they went and won the Super Bowl. I think the Bills' gamble here is that elite wide receiving talent doesn't matter in the long run. Great question for you to think about. Has the wide receiver ever been the best player on any team that won a Super Bowl? I think the answer is no. Just think about it. Got a lot of legacy now of Super Bowls. Has the wide receiver ever been the best player on the team? Quarterbacks win championships. Bills are rolling the dice on this and believe that they're going to be able to find a way to get this all done without needing to pay Stephon Diggs a massive amount. I think this can be both a good move long-term for the Bills and certainly for the Texans. They're going all in and saying C.J. Stroud is that guy. We think we get a good enough talent around him, we can win a championship. Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Biggest moments in college basketball happening right now. Be a part of the action for both men's and women's college basketball. Get in on the playoff action with all the pro sports leagues out there. Also with Major League Baseball, NHL, NBA. 100 times your money on Prize Picks as you can make your picks more or less on a variety of athletes in every different sport, whether it is Caitlin Clark right now in women's college basketball Final Four or DJ Burns in the men's. Download the app today. Use the code OUTKICK for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's code OUTKICK on Prize Picks for a deposit match of up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Must be present in certain states and Canadian provinces. Void where prohibited. Visit prizepicks.com for restrictions and details.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Sage Steel. I believe we have audio of Sage Steel. I think this is a huge story. Sage Steel, friend of mine, you guys know that, friend of OutKick. She said in a recent interview that when she interviewed Joe Biden, every question was scripted and she was not allowed to ask anything off that script at all. I want to play that audio. Do we have that audio to play for everybody? I think we do. I want to, if we can, play that audio here. And then I'm going to react to it more, but I want you to hear it from Sage herself. I believe we've got a clip for you. Let's play it.
Every single question was scripted, gone over dozens of times by many executives, editors and executives. Absolutely. I was on script and was told not to deviate. It was very much, this is what you will ask. This is how you will say it. No follow-ups. Next.
Okay, that's Fox News Digital, I believe. Thanks to Haley on our team for cutting that so you could all see it. Okay, this is a big story. Y'all know, again, I like Sage. I appreciate her telling this story. What everyone who works in sports media, and honestly, even people who don't work in sports media should be asking is, not only is this true, did ESPN script every word, every question of Sage Steele's interview with Joe Biden, but did they also provide those questions in advance to the Biden White House? Now, I think this is a huge story. And some of you out there may be saying, okay, well, why do you think this is a huge story? First of all, why does Joe Biden want to go on ESPN? He wants to talk to an audience that is not there for politics that may be persuadable. That's why he's doing it. That's why any politician wants to go on ESPN. They want to come to a sports audience. This is why I thought it was dumb for Joe Biden not to do the Super Bowl interview. An audience that is there for sports and just be like, hey, I'm a regular guy too. I like sports. I want to talk to you directly in a forum and in a location that is less political, because that's a way for me to persuade you in a way that you might not be persuaded if you watch the State of the Union, or you're watching 60 Minutes, or you're watching a debate or an interview on Fox News, MSNBC, or CNN. If what Sage Steele said is true, not only did left-wingers inside of ESPN ensure that Joe Biden had a kind, gentle, and unthreatening environment for which to do an interview, I would wager they also told the White House in advance exactly what questions were coming. Because otherwise, why would you have all of those questions out there? I will tell you this right now. We have a ton of guests. I have interviewed now Donald Trump, both as president and non-president, I don't know, 5 or 6 different times. I've interviewed every one of the leading Republican candidates. I have interviewed RFK Jr., Tulsi Gabbard when she was running for the office of president of the United States as a Democrat. At no point have I ever told them on any of the shows I've ever been on what questions were coming in advance. In fact, at no point have I ever said that to any guest that has ever appeared on any show that we air. And if anybody ever tried to dictate topics, I wouldn't do the interview. Now, it's not uncommon for somebody to say, hey, so-and-so would like to come on. They've got a book that they're promoting, or they've got a movie that they're promoting. That's understood on some level. I'm not begrudging any of that. I think you understand that in the audience. Hey, so-and-so's coming on. I mean, I've done interviews all over the place. If I'm doing an interview and I got a book out, then I want to be able to talk about my book. That's why I'm coming on and giving you my time. But I've never said, and oh, I don't do public, but oh, Clay won't even talk about this topic. I've never said it my whole life. Never would. Did ESPN pick the topics, the questions, and provide them all to Joe Biden in an effort to help his political standing? I think they probably did. Everyone should be demanding an answer to that question right now, particularly because not only is it an unthreatening environment that is theoretically not there for politics, also, Joe Biden doesn't do that many interviews. So if ESPN is agreeing to ground rules, providing written ideas of what questions they're going to ask, not only are they failing for their audience, but they're rigging the entire game in favor of Joe Biden. I think this is a big story. Credit to Sage Steele for speaking out. Finally, and I'll talk about this maybe more tomorrow, because I'm going to record a fade show with Kelly Stewart next to talk about the Final Four. Maybe we'll do men's and women's, first time ever, gambling picks for all of you. So we're going to talk about that in like 2 minutes. It'll be up later this afternoon, evening. I'm also going to be a guest on Hutton and Withrow's show a little bit later, I think at 5 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock Central. Now I got to go pick up my kid from school, but one of my kids from school. But I do think that story about Sage Steele is important. Tomorrow, I'll talk about this in greater detail. Wall Street Journal, poll is out, says Trump is up in 6 of the 7 swing states, and there's a tie in Wisconsin head-to-head with Joe Biden. What's the significance? Do we buy the poll? Why does it matter? What are the issues that are moving voters right now? I will talk about all of that tomorrow. I'll also talk about Vanderbilt University, how they handled a First Amendment issue, Wall Street Journal editorial that is out there that I think Vanderbilt did a really good job on. I will talk about both those issues tomorrow. I'm going to rip this page off and set it down directly in front of me. I have starred those two issues to ensure that I talk about them tomorrow. I appreciate all of you. As always, my name is Clay Travis. This has been OutKick, the show.